Ohjelman tarjoaa Suomen kulttuuri- ja tiedeinstituutit Pariisissa, Lontoossa, Brysselissä ja Berliinissä.
Aistit is a three-episode podcast series that reflects on art and its accessibility, both on a practical level and through a societal and philosophical approach. Each episode is based on the contemporary art program Aistit Coming to Our Senses, which is presented as part of the Helsinki Festival 2021. During each episode, we will discuss the accessibility of the contemporary art program with its curators and artists. The podcast series is based on Aistit Coming to Our Senses, an evolving program of exhibitions and performances taking place in 5 European cities between 2021 and 2022, produced by the Finnish cultural and academic institutes in the Benelux, France, Germany and the UK and Ireland. The Helsinki chapter of Aistit Coming to Our Senses includes a group exhibition at Kunsthalle Helsinki, a public sound installation by Hans Rosenström and Kalle Nio from Kunsthalle Helsinki to the Temppeli Aukio Rocks, and performances by Kit Kokko at the Cultural Center Stoa. So welcome to the second episode of Aistit Coming to Our Senses podcast series. Today we will talk about a public sound installation, which is a work by Kalle Nio and Hans Rosenström, and it is now part of Helsinki Festival. So my name is Maija Karhunen, and I am a dancer and performer, working in Helsinki, and then also working a bit with accessibility issues in the art field. Welcome to the studio, Hans and Kalle.
Thank you.
Let's start with you, Kalle.
Okay.
If you can tell a little bit about yourself as artist and your work, and then since we are focusing especially on accessibility of art, so if you can tell a bit what is your definition and relationship to accessibility? What has it meant for you in your own work?
Okay. So I have a maybe a little bit complex background, in the sense that my background is in magic and in circus, kind of like originally, or that is how I ended up doing art. That I started to do circus and magic when I was a really young kid, and somehow that evolved into doing more kind of like experimental artistic things, somehow based on circus. But then at some point I realized that maybe my work is a bit closer to visual arts perhaps, so then I went to study in the Academy of Fine Arts, and so I graduated as a visual artist, and also my work has been based on video works quite a lot, so I've combined live performances with video projections, and also done experimental films and things like that. So that's mostly my work as an artist. It's something between visual arts and performances and things like that. And this work we are doing now with Hans is actually the first public work that I've done for outdoors, in that sense. And I was very happy that Hans asked me to be part of the team in the work. And about the accessibility, I think it's a question that is very different depending on what kind of work I'm doing. Normally when I work in theaters, they have normally quite standard ways of the standard accessibility things that we somehow take into account, but that doesn't normally affect so much of the artistic decisions or the work itself. I never done any different versions of the works, for example. That's partly maybe also because of the resources that it's almost a miracle to make even one work. So to make it bigger could be perhaps too much sometimes. But it depends. But of course, when talking about the public artwork, I think it's different thing than making, because I feel that the public space is somehow that you need to take the accessibility different way, because it's somehow you bring the art to the people and not the other way around. So I think it's a bit different situation in a sense, and in terms of our new work that we are talking about now, I think we try to take it as much as we could, and somehow I think we succeeded in that as well. But of course, it depends on like how we see the accessibility as a term and what kind of access we are talking about.
Hans, last week you were here more in the role of a curator, and now you are more in the role of an artist, which is a more familiar role to you. But then we talked last week like how as a curator you have to maybe work more consistently, or at least in this case you chose to work more consistently with accessibility and kind of being the mediator between the artworks and the artists and then the public. And yeah, we talked about accessibility in that process, but did that work then make you think about accessibility then in your art making as an artist in a different way, or maybe not?
That is a very good question, and also probably a bit complex to answer, because this is the first time that I am organizing a larger entity of, or a larger body of works, or curating something. And now I've been so involved with that, and I haven't really started any new processes of making my own art. But I'm quite sure that it has affected me, that I probably will be more aware of questions like questions regarding accessibility. I think in most of my work, I work with installations. And I work with a presence in the space, in my artistic work. And that always, it's an, like I work with an experience, body that experiences the space around it. But I always work from my body, from the limit, like I use my own body as a reference. And that's the beginning point in many of things that I do as an artist. And I think when translating this to questions of accessibility, it is, of course, I think I will still continue working using my body as a reference point, but I now will have these other points of views that I'm sure I will be more aware of, and try to take them in try to involve them into the process somehow.
So about your sound installation, Weaving and Yearning. So it's a song played on a route from Taidehalli to Temppeli Aukio Rocks. Could you a little bit maybe even describe the work to our listeners, and then just talk about how did you come to work with this piece and about the process and
where? Yes, where to start?
Yeah, it's been a bit long process, isn't it?
It's been a long process that started in... This work was commissioned to be presented in King's Cross in London. And, the commission was to create a public artwork in King's Cross.
Yeah.
And we started off by traveling to King's Cross and wandering around and discussing what would feel meaningful in this space? What could be possible to show in this space?
Yeah, and if you haven't been in King's Cross, it's quite a busy area. It has it's very commercial area. It has like these big office spaces, the Google headquarters and Facebook and things like that. Like a lot of like big buildings, a lot of people. Or during that time, still yeah, there were people.
This was just before.
Now it's empty, but like normally, yeah. And shops and things like that. So yeah.
So at first it started from our trip there, and then coming back home to our studios and starting to reflect what we experienced.
Yeah, and it's I think like in the King's Cross, like the idea was make a public artwork in there, and one I think particular thing about King's Cross is that it's actually the whole area is owned by a private company. So it's like the whole London. It's like there's a lot of areas that are owned by private companies, and that means that they also have an art projects there. So it's very much the whole area is somehow curated. So there is a, like there's a lot of public artworks in the space already. So when we were looking at the place, we realized that okay, there's a statue there. There's a some kind of artwork over there. So there's already a lot of things there. So it was also a little bit shocking place in a way that we are supposed to make a public artwork for this area, but there is already so much that actually it would kind of be nicer to take something away rather than to bring some more into this place that already has everything.
Yeah, and then I guess that led us to, in the end, to think about sound as a medium instead of bringing something physical.
Yeah,
we could use sound, which is immaterial in its essence, and still you can use it to fill a space or to take space for a while.
Yeah,
but sound also brings other questions, and of course, sound is something that the listeners also. Can't turn off, basically. It's like if you have a visual entity, you can always look the other way, but sound is something that penetrates. So therefore we also started to think about what if it would be a sound work that wouldn't play constantly but only would happen once, and what if it wouldn't happen in one place but would actually transport or move through a space.
Yeah. So it's so it wouldn't be like, because we were thinking, okay, if we have a piece that is constantly playing, it will, you know, people will become crazy like hearing the same thing over again. But if it's something that is moving, so it's not really at one place. If you decide to listen to it, you can follow the sound. But if you choose not to hear it, it doesn't bother you too long.
Mm-hmm. And then it takes about 20 minutes if you do it from the beginning to the end, and it's a song. That is composed by Aino Venna.
Yes, that's correct.
And then the sort of the walk starts, or it's during sunset.
Yes, it's true. It starts at sunset, and we thought that sunset would be a very nice time because it's a time of change. It's a time when light shifts, and we are moving from the day to night. And it felt like a very good idea to present something at that time.
Yeah, and there's also like a sort of like historical aspect to that as well. Like it's very common in many cities that during the when it's sort of the night comes, there is the church bells or in many cities there is some music or some kind of like night call type of thing so it's like these kind of things they have some kind of like tradition as well. So that was also one of our references that we were thinking these, like you have this kind of like city sound and in your mind it's a particular sound to some specific city. So we were thinking that it would be cool if we could make this kind of thing that when you hear the sound, it's kind of like this Pavlovian effect that you know, okay, now it's the night and now it's the sunset, now it's the time. So it kind of like create this, like it works differently when you hear it many times than when you first hear it the first time.
So in Helsinki the work is the walk starts from Taidehalli and then ends up in Temppeli Aukio, church, kind of the rocks behind the church, right? And then, yeah, like putting the work there, like what were all the sort of the accessibility issues that you had to think about? Like, I mean, as myself, like as a wheelchair user, yeah, I would think immediately like of the route of the walking, like, yeah, like I have understood that partly it is possible to walk the route or with the other audience, but then maybe there are parts that were not able to or were not possible to arrange like that. And yeah, like what else besides that? You probably had to think about a lot of things.
Yes, it's a very different environment, of course, from the King's Cross kind of walking streets into this sort of more neighborhood of houses where people live. It's a very much more quiet. But we really enjoyed how, when you come to Temple Aukio, how the sky also becomes so overpowering. Like it's, the sky is very big in Temple Aukio, and unfortunately, like it's not possible to get on the rocks, for example, with a wheelchair. But luckily, since it is sound and since there's multiple speakers and it comes from multiple directions, the sound is audible, of course, everywhere. And then there is the sort of sand road from behind the rocks, where you can come part like halfway up, so there is a way to access, to hear it, so like there's a way to access it without losing the sound, but there's to find, like it's hard, more trickier to get all the way up to the top.
But I think the place was selected because like we were scouting the city and thinking like what could be the best place for it, and well, one reason was of course because there's the exhibition in Taidehalle, it's really, so it's kind of like continuation for that. But another reason was that the area is it's a particular in that sense that it has a sort of a dramaturgy to the roads. So like when we start from the art hall, it's a, we have a sort of like a area where people can sort of wait for the start. And then we go to a little bit more narrow alley, and from there we go to a place where we have a sort of view, which is very. So what we were actually looking for was a road that would fit into the dramaturgy of this song, because we already had the song made basically for the King's Cross. So
that's
we had to
true, yeah.
We had to find this kind of like sort of like a dramaturgy for that, and so we wanted to have some kind of like a square in the beginning, some kind of like square in the end, and some kind of like changes that would fit to the mood of the song in the middle. So this street and this road was actually perfect for the song, but it almost I think it's somehow even better than the original in some ways, that we have these kind of like dramatic changes in the atmosphere, because definitely we have to say that the work is not only the song, but it's how your senses, how you perceive the environment, how the song affects the city in the time when we are there. I think that's mainly the piece actually. So that's why I think this road was in that sense perfect. I it's a pity that it's not completely, the end is not completely accessible, but I think what is interesting about the piece itself is that it's also possible, and I think most of the people even will hear it very differently than we have planned. Because I think there will be some people who will come and follow the song, but I think there will be a lot of people who will just be on the street and the song will follow them, or it will fly over them. So, and there's nothing wrong about that. I think it can be very interesting in that sense as well. And Temppeli Aukio as a square, it's very particular because it's surrounded by big buildings which are echoing the sound all over the place. So we haven't yet been able to hear it on every corner of the street, but I think it can be very interesting in different parts of the square.
Ohjelman tarjoaa Suomen kulttuuri- ja tiedeinstituutit Pariisissa, Lontoossa, Brysselissä ja Berliinissä.
So in the first episode we discussed a little bit the work of Kristin Sun Kim, who is an artist whose work was presented in the chapter in Berlin of Aistit Coming to Our Senses.
Yes, in Berlin we showed a work by Kristin Sun Kim called 4x4, which is a sound installation, but an infrasound installation that's not, meaning that the sound is not audible through your ear because the vibrations are so long, so the ear, human ear cannot pick them up, but you can actually sense the sound waves in your body. And Kristin talks about this as a democratic way of experiencing sound, which is the same for everyone.
Yeah, then Christine's also talking very interestingly about ownership of sound. And people who have access to sound kind of own it in a way and have a say in it.
Yeah,
or that's how it often goes. So yeah, then your work is in public space. So how did you work with this kind of?
That is also a very good question, or a good thing to think about. Who has ownership to public space, and sound is something that takes space. Definitely. We were thinking about when we were walking here and listening to these talking advertisements and. And in some ways, it's always good to be very try to be as mindful as possible when one works with sound. And I think that was one of the challenges we had when we were transforming the work from a more livelier environment to a more quieter street.
Yeah. But I think the sound is something that people are so delicate into. Like for us, the sound, we are very specific that the sound volume doesn't. It's actually quite low volume that we are using for the piece. But the quality of the sound, because it's a solo singers and they are mostly classically trained singers. So the quality of their voice is very audible, and even though the volume is quite low, it's much lower than the traffic or the trams and something. It's something that you spot very easily, and I think it's every time you have any kind of sound artwork, if it's a festival or if it's a concert or if it's anything, I think there are some people who may find it distractive, but also like most of the people find it nice to have art. I don't know. It's funny, what kind of sounds we ignore, and I think human sound is something that you don't ignore very easily. It's a very something that it makes your senses very alarmed. So it may feel that it's very over the top, even though it would be low volume, because I think our brain is so much wired into hearing human sounds, I suppose, so that maybe the airplane you don't even pay attention, even though the sound would be louder.
Yeah, but in some way your work is like, the sound is, I mean, it's very beautiful and pleasant. Yeah, I mean, I guess some people could get provoked even from this, or like get irritated, but in some way I think it's like somehow, I mean, I think there is public art that often is also much more like provoking more.
yeah. But for us, the idea was never to provoke for this piece, because we want it to be kind of like calming and pleasant, and kind of like we thought that yeah, for this work it was important that it's not harsh or it's not too much
comforting
even. Yeah. But I don't know how it would work, if it would be very disturbing or distracting. I think it would be quite difficult to do it in a...
Yeah, no, that would go against everything, I think, that we wanted to build.
Yeah.
Yeah, but still about working in public place and public space. Because I have a different experience. I was working as a performer, it was a work by Dries Verhoeven, and it's a glass box situated on the street. And then obviously, and like me and many other performers were in our turns, like sitting inside there and doing things, and obviously you can think about that as something quite problematic. There was this provocativeness to the work. But then sometimes I felt like, yeah, it was always situated on a kind of shopping street, so like the most commercial place that you can find in a city, and kind of that people just come across it. And I felt sometimes like, yeah, it was not only about the work itself was provocative, but then for some people it was just provocative to come across art when they did not expect to. Mm-hmm. Or like but then like with your work, it's a bit like as you said, maybe sometimes you are walking on the street and then you hear the sound, but a lot of it is also about making a choice, like to be at Taidehalli at a certain time, and Töölö is also not an area that people maybe so much pass through, like as you've been talking about, it's quiet and yeah. So
yeah, it's sort of quiet, but at the same time, the Temppeli Aukio Church is probably one of the most busiest tourist attractions in Helsinki.
True.
So it's kind of like at the same time, it's the busiest center of this quiet area. So I think it makes it a sort of weird feeling for that area as well. I actually used to live very close to that for many years, and it's a funny combination sometimes with a lot of tourists and then the local kids and random people. I think it's a fun spot.
Yeah, and also it's a very affluent area. Like it's fancy.
Yeah.
Area.
Yeah, it is.
But I think there's a. Certainly, like something that I think we've thought, or always when you work in a public space, that you need to reflect upon, and that doesn't necessarily mean that you need to do changes because of that. But exactly the question of that: there are people who come to see the work, but most of the people who are there are experiencing or seeing a work in a public space without their. That they didn't come there to see that work, but they experience it suddenly. And I think I worked quite a lot in public spaces, and I always thought that it's a quite interesting. It's interesting to bring something to a person that they experience without having a background idea of, or having the mental state of, like, that I came here to experience it, but that they experience it more unexpectedly. And I maybe think that also, of course, makes it, or I think that makes the experiencing situation a bit different because of the unpreparedness to it. but it also possibly makes it, it's raw in a way, it's not as reflecting as you might be as an audience member when you kind of, because when you experience other works or consciously experience, consciously is the wrong word.
By choice,
you think about the work in relation to the environment, you think about the, because when you choose to go and look at art, you look at it in the relation to its surroundings always. And that's why public art or site-specific art specifically, so it's so interesting to work, because you create the work in a relation to its surrounding. Mm. But then, I guess for the people who are not on the street to experience the work, they might feel that it intrudes the surrounding. I think it takes a little bit more maybe for them to pause down and to sense before it falls into place, or not falling into place as well.
But I think with the public artworks, it's always the thing is that the city becomes like the people who are living there make it, sort of like in order to make public artworks, you need a lot of permissions, you need a lot of like, for instance, in our work, we needed the electricity from different places, and for instance the Temppeli Aukion church, they were really helpful for us, and they were just because that's one thing when you're making a public artwork, we wanted to make the piece for like on top of this church, and we were very nervous, like how would they react to that. Maybe they said no, sorry, it's our church, you cannot do anything there. But when we wrote them, they were really like super welcoming and very helpful, and they were just said that it's great that somebody's doing art like here, and they were happy to have that, and we are super super grateful and happy for that as well. But it's I think that's the whole city works like that. Like if you are owning a building, you own some apartments, it's your decision, like if you want to have art or if you want to have happenings or you want to have things, and you can always complain, but you can always thank for these things to happen. So I think it really is people choose what kind of city they want to live in, and these kind of like small decisions, if you allow some work somewhere or you do not, it makes the city very different.
Yeah, and somehow I feel like if I think about hierarchy of things in public space, like I think art is still quite high up, like I think it's quite like much wanted there. I mean, even though sometimes there can be conflicts and little like issues, but generally I think like it's something that is still, or I don't know if you agree, but I feel that it's still quite much supported, the presence of art, and if I compare to, I don't know, like people that or things that we want to clean out of the public space, I think art is not one of those things. Yeah, and also we are not always somehow so much aware what we can do in public space, like also that it is like our space. maybe to present an artwork you need more permissions or something like that, but then like if you want to demonstrate, you don't actually need a permission, like, but we are not often aware of that all this.
Yeah.
Things that we are allowed to do in the space, and what is kind of our right.
Yeah, it's true. It's kind of like it's very hard to know what is like commercial and what is public space these days, because it's so much like, yeah, it's everything is blending so much, and yeah, hard to know. And I think it's quite often it's very hard for the people who are guarding the spaces also to know like what is allowed and not. I think can be tricky sometimes.
Ohjelman tarjoaa Suomen kulttuuri- ja tiedeinstituutit Pariisissa, Lontoossa, Brysselissä ja Berliinissä.
So in the beginning of each episode of Aistit Coming to Our Senses podcast, we are lucky to hear a small fragment of the song that is played as part of your installation, Weaving Yearning. And you mentioned already that the song is composed and written also by Aino Venna.
You mean text? The song is written by Aino.
So the process actually went so that we had we first made it the text.
Yeah, and we started to visualize an idea.
Mm.
Kind of, it started to grow in us, and we started to write a text, and we started to think that we could improvise this with singers. But at some point, we realized that it would be much stronger, probably still, to have someone who would know how to compose. And then we went and listened to a lot of musicians and composers, and Aino Venna, whom Kalle knows from before a little bit, seemed like we felt that she has a certain sensibility that we really appreciated, and we felt that we could ask her if she would like to work with this together with us.
Yeah, and we were a little bit nervous, like at first, to ask for a composer, because, like, when you are working with, we had already quite a strong impression, like what we wanted to have and what we wanted to do. So it's not so easy situation for a composer to come into the process in that point. But we had a meeting with Aino, and I think it was very clear from the beginning that she kind of like got the idea. Like, so it was very easy to talk with her because she kind of like understood what was supposed to happen, and she had already sort of quite a lot of ideas how it should be, and we had a lot of similar references that we were changing back and forth. So it kind of like seemed that we had a common language.
Yeah, definitely.
And one big part of the thing was also the selection of the singers. We already had at the beginning we had quite many different ideas, like who could be the singers. But then the COVID came, and like originally we were supposed to actually do the recordings in London. But then it was impossible for the traveling restrictions, so we decided to do the recordings in Helsinki. And then Aino was actually working with a new record, and she had this small ensemble. I don't know if you can say ensemble, but like singers who were singing some things for her new record. And she said like, "Hey, I have a perfect combination for you already." And we were like, "Okay."
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So then we have Laura Salovaara, who's a soprano, who's one of the singers, and then we have Walter Maasalo and David
Haxton.
David Haxton, yeah.
And Walter is, I guess, baritone.
Yeah.
And David is our contratenor.
Yeah, yeah. So it was like very cool scale of human sounds, and then Aino is also singing herself in the song. So, and it was very, very nice to work with them because they were such a professional singers and such a like good variety of different versions that they were able to do. And it's like if you think about the recording session, it was also like it's funny because like with classical trained singers, I think the definition of what is interesting and what is good, I think it's sometimes a bit different when you compare it to like visual artists, like what we think what is interesting or what is good, because for us it was quite often that we love the mistakes, we like when you hear the human in the voice and you hear that there is actually a person behind the voice. But sometimes for the classical singers, it's, you know, you have to, they are aiming for a completely different type of perfection. So we had a lot of discussions, like what kind of sound we are looking for.
Yeah, in order to experience your work, it is also about hearing sound. And then from the point of view of accessibility, I of course start to think about what if you cannot hear or you lack any other sense or many senses. Yeah, also in your lyrics in the song, you have this line, absent to the eye, present to the skin. So there is this quality of multisensoriality to experience the work. So yeah, this was probably something that you were working with.
I think the line was inspired partly also by, partly when we were writing these lyrics, I think we're thinking about the qualities of air and how air is something that we all feel with our bodies, but we can't see it. But air is also something that transports the sound and also therefore connects us with each other. And air as an element is something that we all share, that we're all inside. So I think those were ideas that we somehow tried to write into this. And this sort of moving sound, or this sort of song that connects with it, or different singers that connect with each other with the song, I thought it kind of supported the idea quite well.
But yeah, it's a sort of like the whole song is sort of like a wave of sound that we are starting, and physically it is like we are basically moving the air and you somehow hear it. But like in terms of like thinking, like can you, like what if you cannot hear? And I think it might be actually quite interesting piece if you cannot hear, because like now we have been testing the piece a little bit, and it's incredible like how it changed the situation. Like people somehow stop and people somehow start to behave differently. And I think it's something like, if we think about the piece, it's about air in a way, but it works in a little bit same way like the weather. Like if thunder, you hear a thunderstorm or it starts to rain, people can talk, like at least in Finland, people don't so much like spontaneously start to talk to each other. But if the weather is something sudden is happened, people are it's starting to rain or whatever, and somehow that connects the people. And I think this is a little bit similar reaction that we are getting from this piece, that people who don't know each other, they start to, okay, like what's going on, like what's happening here, and people start to somehow connect because of this song. And I think this reaction can be quite interesting to see if you don't hear the song, because like people just start to act weird
or behave.
Yeah, and it's also like it's a very of course, like with different people, it's a very personal experience on how you react on these type of things. But I think for many people, it kind of like changes the balance of your senses in a way, that when you hear the music, the whole environment becomes kind of like more cinematic. You have this feeling of, okay, we're in a film when you have the music, or that kind of like you start to actually see more when you hear unexpected sound, which is I guess that's normal. Like when you hear a siren or something like that, you start to look around, like where's the cops or whatever. But I think it affects like a lot of your senses, I can only imagine like how it looks like if you don't hear the sound. What is causing it?
Yeah, and then I mean, yeah, there is. Yeah, I'm still thinking about a person who doesn't hear. So, yeah, I mean, there is this kind of just being in the shared situation, and all that we talked about from that perspective. But then also, like in last week's episode, we also talk about that there are still ways to translate sound to something that is accessible to someone who cannot hear, like visually or physically, or and with the lyrics, like they could be visible, and that there could be an object that you can hold in your hand and it could vibrate, and we talked about all these technical solutions and like but which also require often money, but then also like mental resources
And time to produce.
Time, yeah.
Also, money and time.
Yeah, it's a sort of like a translation, like it's not so easy, like how to translate the work to sort of like another language in a way.
Mm. It's very much a question of this.
Yeah, it's not an easy task.
And still, how to make it interesting in that other language. So it's not just a description of the work, but it's actually a work of art. And that's also one question why I'm often quite hesitant in using texts that people can read while they listen. Because for me, the listening experience is so much about sensing the surrounding.
Mm.
And then if you can read the text at the same time, then your focus is on the text and not on the surrounding.
Mm.
And but I also very aware of that this that's not beneficial for questions of accessibility necessarily, or even people don't understand what, for example, our work is like, what the lyrics are, and I don't actually mind for like, even if you don't hear, like that it's hard to understand what they're saying or singing, even if you would hear them.
Mm. Yeah, and it's also like maybe it's because of my background in magic, but I really like kind of like secrets, and I like puzzles, and I like these kind of things. So I would actually rather people not to get everything and to kind of like, so it becomes this kind of like riddle, like what did they say and what was the meaning? I think it's like, if we talk about like exhibitions in museums or like the curatorial work, it's quite often for me it's distracting if you are explaining too much of like what is the meaning of the work, or this work is about something and something, because for me what is interesting in art is basically the mystery and the strange things that I cannot really explain necessarily completely. So I think it's also important sort of like restrict information in order to keep the art a little bit mysterious in a way.
I think there's also value that art isn't, that art is a little bit mysterious, because it makes it more open and it allows more interpretations. And of course, all encounters are subjective, so then that allows that people experience them through their own pasts and histories, and if it's too explanatory, it becomes a little bit more preaching, or a little bit more like I would not like to use the word it kind of kills the art, but it definitely makes it less versatile and open and interesting.
And I really love like the misheard lyrics. There's several books about them. And, like, I think it's so funny. Like, you may have like very deep understanding of the song, and you completely missed the lyrics. And I think that's great.
Great. Thank you so much, Kalle Nio and Hans Rosenström.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure to talk with you. And Weaving Yearning can be seen at Kunsthalle Helsinki from the 20th of August until the 5th of September, each night, right? Yeah, at 8:30.
Yeah, it starts every night at 8:30 in front of Kunsthalle.
Yeah.
And from there, it's just to follow your senses.
And it's for free, right?
It is for free.
Cool. And in the next episode, I will be discussing with Kid Kokko and Tari Dori about their performance Katoaminen Passio, which is also part of Aistit and will be performed in Stoa in a couple of weeks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ohjelman tarjoaa Suomen kulttuuri- ja tiedeinstituutit Pariisissa, Lontoossa, Brysselissä ja Berliinissä.
Radio Helsinki. Vaihtoehtoinen valinta.